Welcome to day 25 of lockdown in the UK, where we were told just yesterday that lockdown would remain at least until May the 7th, although there are no firm dates given for anything beyond that. And we are told by the government's chief scientific advisor, Sir Patrick Vallance, that the R0 level, which tells us how many new cases are created, is somewhere between 0.5 and 1. Which means that the epidemic is now likely to be shrinking. My name is Emma Marney.
And my name is Clarissa Vorfeld, and welcome to day 33 of lockdown in Switzerland, where we've now been broadcasting every working day of lockdown in the UK, while we in Switzerland have been given three clear steps to get out of lockdown starting on Monday, 27th of April.
God, some clarity, how refreshing. All we seem to get is the police interpreting new rules and issuing fines if they don't feel people are sticking by them. Except for the government, that is, who've been flouting them all over the place.
No, I have something to say about that in a minute, but just to let you incarcerated Brits know what coming out of lockdown looks like, and remember, we're 8 days ahead of you going into it, and we only have a very small population of 8 million. This is what it's like. Step one, April 27th, is the reopening of dentists, beauticians, hairdressers, tattoo parlours, very important, garden centres and hardware stores. Importantly, hospitals will resume normal operating schedules.
But as we mentioned in an earlier podcast, Switzerland always had a much better bed capacity than the UK in hospitals. So I guess normal operations can resume more easily.
Yeah, in fact, that's quite true. It's a case of hypochondriacs, come on down. In Switzerland, going to the doctor is almost a civic duty. Prevention is better than a cure is the principle of our excellent public healthcare system here. I mean, you have a duty to go to the doctor, but Corona has meant a drop-off in the number of people seeking medical help. And the Swiss Hospital Association is concerned. They're urging patients with non-coronavirus issues to make sure they receive medical treatment too. And they point to a case of a diabetes patient having to have his foot amputated as his insulin dosage was not modified. So they want hospitals running as normal as possible.
Ouch. Well, that seems a lot further off than for us. But there have also been pleas this week for people suffering from sort of heart attacks and strokes and not going into A&E because of fears of catching the virus there.
Well, you can rest assured in Britain. I mean, that will pass. I mean, it sounds like the NHS is handling this very well. I gather that huge Nightingale Hospital in London is nowhere near full. And step two in Switzerland will be on May the 11th. You see, they give you very clear dates. That'll be the reopening of schools, both primary and secondary. There is no confirmation yet on university reopenings, but schools haven't been seen as quite such a breeding ground as other groups because of the way the virus is so much more dangerous for the older population.
And while we're on the older population, I have to jump in there and say that they have finally given poor Captain Tom Moore a rest. After putting him on front of the newspapers and all the news for ages, the 99-year-old has raised more than 16 million.
Wow.
And he's finally allowed to leave. The latest big figure was apparently he raised 16 million more than any other person on Just Giving has ever raised. The last guy was Stephen Sutton, the teenage cancer victim, and he died aged 19 in 2014, and he raised 5.2 million. So Captain Tom Moore has really given us a great send-off with a little speech saying, you've all got to remember that we'll get through this in the end. It might take time, but at the end of the day, we'll all be okay again. So to all of those finding it difficult, the sun will shine on you again and the clouds will go away.
Oh, that's so sweet. Well, do you want to know what the final bit of coming out of lockdown looks like, Swiss style?
Yes, please.
So step three on June the 8th is a provisional date. that will see restaurants, bars, concert halls, football stadiums, sporting events taking place again, those places reopening. But this will only be confirmed once the impact of step one has been assessed by the federal government. But even so, at least they have given us something to aim for. I watched the British briefing yesterday at 5 o'clock, and I was really sort of shocked by the way the health secretary, Matt Hancock, says that the British public can't be trusted with a coronavirus exit strategy, as they might stop obeying lockdown rules. I mean, it's ridiculous.
I think he meant his own government. After all, it's the MPs are the ones that keep getting publicly shamed for visiting second homes or family far away, and visits from outside family members, Boris not excepted.
God, well, Hancock said, and I quote, the clarity of messaging had a direct impact on how many people obey social distancing rules, which is frankly quite insulting, incredibly patronising.
I quite agree. I only hope that they follow some of the Swiss tactics and treat us all as grown-ups. Now, with the end in sight, I think this is the moment to mention that we're going to take a break from the podcast for a while, so you can prepare to get out and about.
Yeah, I can believe it. And I hope that the Swiss example being a bit further ahead, as Germany is, and Spain we'll hear about in a minute from Andrew, plus all the positive stories that we've dug up during this difficult time, especially around the environment, as well as the surge in sex toys and bidets, have kept people's collective peckers up.
Yes, and I think we have two treats a bit later on for those listening. First is our guest writer, Paul Richardson, in rural Spain, in Extremadura. He's been sharing his tips on looking after chickens, and he's going to play us out with a Chopin prelude written while Chopin himself was in lockdown.
Oh, I think for everyone listening, there is pretty much nothing I like more than listening to Paul play the piano. So I'm looking forward to that enormously, as well as we're hearing more about Chopin in isolation, because I didn't know that.
Yes, and also joining us from urban Spain in Barcelona is Andrew Sinclair, who's been keeping us up to date with some of the more outlandish tricks the Spanish have been playing as they too begin to inch out of lockdown, including borrowing dogs and online get-togethers with the Stark Bollock Naked Club. Andrew, welcome.
Hello, Andrew.
Hi.
Now, Andrew, there's been a few things that are beginning to happen in urban Spain, aren't there? I mean, you've got a few, the construction section, I gather, or sector are beginning.
Construction and manufacturing, which I suppose is not only urban Spain, but yes, they're allowed back to work. And there has been a change, I've noticed. There's more cars on the road, there's more people around. It's still mostly closed, but I don't know whether those people are perhaps, whether they're jumping on a bandwagon, some people, and getting out, pretending they're on the way to the building site. I don't quite know.
And what happened? Have you still got the hairdressers and the dry cleaners? Are they still open?
No, they went a couple of weeks ago. They were the beginning. They were deemed a necessity for the first section. And then I think the Saturday before last, we went into a deeper lockdown and they were suddenly closed. So no haircuts, no dry cleaners. And they don't seem to be able to come back on either. They haven't been brought back along with the manufacturing and the construction people. So we're still getting our hairs growing at home.
And I was quite surprised, because I forgot that children aren't allowed out to exercise. So have they really been cooped up all this time in Barcelona?
Apparently, yes. There's a big kind of campaign, actually, including by the mayor of Barcelona, Ada Colau. She's written an open letter saying that children are, I'm putting on, there's some sort of theory how on earth they can work it out, but they reckon they're going to put on some vast amount of weight, each child's, and put on something like kind of a tenth of its body weight during this period in kind of too many tortillas or whatever they're stuffing down their faces to keep them quiet. And sort of mental problems too, I guess, being cooped up in the house. But they are trying to now allow children to go out kind of with their parents locally for walks and stuff, but that hasn't happened yet. So dogs have the advantage. Dogs are serving their paws rubbed raw, but children are rubbing their parents raw at home.
It kind of seems the wrong way around, that you can take your dog out for a walk, but you can't take your child out for a walk. But that's the way the Spanish have done it.
Yes, that seems strange, doesn't it? For a nation of child fanciers, it does seem odd that dogs have suddenly leapt ahead. I'm not quite sure why that is.
Yes, they're passionate about their children. I wanted to ask you, Andrew, whether as a nationality, the Spanish are sort of obedient and sort of, you know, I mean, they were bossed around by Franco, and whether that still has reverberations or whether they flick two fingers to authority and do their own thing.
Well, in my little tiny area, because I'm only allowed out to walk, of course, the shop, although I do walk a scenic route, people seem to be obeying it, actually. I've heard of somebody in Madrid, in a street in Madrid, their neighbours were pelting people with eggs and tomatoes, people that seemed to be walking without either a dog or a shopping basket or whatever else you're allowed to do. But that hasn't happened here. But there are some, like everywhere, I guess, there are some little mini Francos trying to control other people. But generally, in my very limited research, it seems people are following it, yeah.
Very good.
And what's the overall kind of mood as you are sort of, because you must be in, you're 13 days ahead, aren't you?
It's really hard to know, because of course you can read the papers and things, but I haven't talked to a stranger in 2 months. I've only talked to people I personally know, or, you know, wide sort of variety of reactions. I think people are coping really quite well, actually, I think. I mean, there's never any talk in the papers. I mean, there's a lot of talk in England, as you just said, about how that people don't go crazy, they're not going to follow the rules, they're given too much information. None of that here. People are just accepting the fact that, you know, this is for the greater good. And I don't know where this sort of new thing of England being, British people being, these are terrible rebels who can't be allowed to know too much information. They'll run amok around every park in the land. But here, Paul Corey say too from his rural thing, but from here it seems that people are really kind of following it pretty well.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you for updating with that, us about that. And Paul, going on to your rural bit here, you were going to tell us a little bit about how music has helped you to self-isolate and soothe your soul. So what in particular has been helping you with that?
Well, I've noticed that apparently there have been record sales of puzzles and of sewing machines. So evidently people have different things to console themselves with. But my chosen consolation is definitely music. And of course, then you have to decide what it is that you're going to listen to that's going to console you and not going to whip you up into a frenzy. So, you know, there's all sorts of choices, and you could sort of choose if you wanted something big and blousy and romantic to lift you out of the gloom. Then you might listen to Rachmaninoff or Tchaikovsky. And Bach is fantastic because it sort of has this feeling that everything's in its right place, and his sort of perfect rock solid Protestant faith and all that stuff. But ultimately, my fave is definitely Chopin when it comes to sort of really sort of a feel good effect.
And why is that? Because am I right in thinking that Chopin himself had to isolate once and was quarantined somewhere?
Well, yes, he did. And of course, here there is a Spanish connection, because Chopin came with his then girlfriend, George Sand, the French novelist, to spend time in Mallorca in the winter of 1838. And it was the holiday from hell, essentially. They were evicted from their first lodgings when it was discovered that Chopin had tuberculosis. And they took refuge in an abandoned, semi-abandoned monastery in Valdemossa, where they lived in a cell on their own, and had a pretty horrendous time. But evidently, the isolation somehow stimulated the creativity of Mr. Chopin, the composer. And he sort of was very productive, had a tiny little rubbish piano that he composed on, and he wrote the most beautiful music, the preludes, mainly are the most, I think, the most, the best known of his, the works he composed in Mallorca. And I was thinking I might perhaps play you a little example, perhaps a bit later on.
Well, definitely. Now seize the moment. This will be a perfect time.
Okay. Well, what I was going to play was number 13, the prelude number 13 in F sharp major. which I think is deeply consoling. I'd like to have your opinion at some point.
Okay, well, as this is going to be our break for a while, why don't you play us out? We've got less than a minute, so play away.